MSW Media.
And now, here's the universe letting us know it really doesn't want us to have a promo from Pitbull. I was wondering if you could do me one quick favor, say, hey, this is Pitbull, and you're listening to What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn.
Hello, Chico. Pitbull, Mr. 305, but it's...
Oop.
It's official. What are we drinking?
By the way, you dropped
Dan
out.
Dunn?
You dropped out for a second there. Your phone went out. Let's try one more time.
It's that little Chico Pitbull, Mr. 305, but it said Mr. Worldwide. Play with it, darling. Yeah.
I think the universe does not want you to promote my show. Every time you do it, it keeps dropping out. But don't worry about it, man.
One more time, Chico.
One more time.
Try one more time, Chico. One more time.
I'll try one more time, right?
Here we go.
I'm going to try one more time. That little Chico Pitbull, Mr. 305, better said Mr. Worldwide, and it's official. You are listening to What Are We Drinking with Dan Dunn. Game, play with it. Yeah!
That's good, man.
Well, pour yourself a glass, sit for a spill. It's time to have some fun. Let's do a little thinking, some picking and a drinking. Well, this is what we're drinking with Dan Dunn. Oh, yeah.
Do you hear the laughter, Brad? Can you hear the laughter?
I can sense it. I can sense it in the room.
You know why everybody's happy? Because usually when I start the show off, I'm all by myself, but not today. Today is a special day, and we're actually in studio with our roving correspondent, Brad Jaffe. Brad, welcome.
Ah, that's refreshing. Thanks for the straws, Dan.
Hold on, the crowd wants to acknowledge your presence.
Thank you, thank you. All right, you guys can sit down. Come on, come on.
So it's good to have you here, man, and you are here for a very special reason. You and I just returned very recently from, is it the biggest cocktail festival in the world? One of them.
I'm going to say in the United States, without a doubt.
Tales of the Cocktail in New Orleans, Louisiana. It is an annual Bacchanal. Well, it got sort of got put on hold a little bit because of the COVID, but it is a annual Bacchanal, puts representatives from the world's biggest liquor brands,
bartenders,
in the same room.
Beverage with, directors.
Yeah, with the biggest
spirits, personalities.
Yeah, yes.
They're all there.
The big business of booze gets done there, doesn't it, Brad? And it's like a spring break sort of situation,
I like
too.
To call it a confab.
It is. That's a good word.
Yeah,
it's a fabulous word. So you and I were down there for the week. There's a million parties and seminars.
Right.
And how many people would you say are down there?
Estimated about 16 to 17,000 attendees.
Wow.
At the 2022, which is the 20th iteration of Tales of the Cocktail, for those of keeping count at home.
Insane. And I've been to about 14 of them. And one of the person that was down there, Miss Frankie Marshall.
Miss Frankie Marshall,
a world famous keeper of the bar. Spirits educator. And in a little while on this episode, I'm going to be running a little chat I had with her down there about Martell Cognac.
That was fantastic. She really just brings so much knowledge and information and pronunciation as well, which
yes.
is really important to me because I don't speak a lick of French,
yeah.
and she just nails it all. Anytime that I've ever hosted something with her, she's just like, no. She's very polite. She's like, she'll say the word that you said wrong and just be like, oh, okay.
She's amazing. Also down there, you and I had a little powwow with our old friend of the show, Mr. Brian Cranston.
Immortalized
That's
in
right.
bronze.
That's right. That's right. He got, it says, we met with him. We met with Brian. And again, Brian has been on this show. Brad has hung out with Brian numerous times, interviewed him, went to stores, stocking stores with Dos Hombres Mezcal with
to
him.
To the Valley. He's the only person that I will go to the Valley for is Brian Cranston and Aaron Paul.
That's right. And we hung out with him on Thursday, last Thursday. I don't know when you're listening to this podcast, but for us, it was last Thursday. And in New Orleans, and then the following day, he went to Albuquerque, New Mexico to meet up with Aaron Paul, where what happened, Brent?
They had bronze statues of their likenesses in the show. It's not Brian Cranston and Aaron Paul, to be clear. It is Jesse and Mr. White.
From Breaking Bad.
From Breaking Bad, their iconic roles, and they're there watching the unveiling, and they're pulling the sheet off of it, and there's this incredible photo that I encourage everybody to go take a look at, which is just this expression on Aaron Paul's face while he's seeing the bronze likening of him for the first time, and he is really quite elated.
And we actually have some audio of what Brian said when he saw the statue.
You clearly don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Classic.
Well, he was really excited for that statue. That's
actually what he was saying to most journalists. That was live footage of what he was saying to some of the other journalists at our roundtable.
Yeah, he's a great dude, and Brad and I are going to listen to some clips from the chat we had with him and break it down a little bit. But I was hoping to get, you did a lot down there. What are some of the highlights of Tales? Things that people out there, some usable information, were any spirits you came in contact with? And by that, I mean quaffed.
Absolutely. I mean, what I love is when you're hanging out with one of these brand people or spirits educators or anybody that you know is in deep with their specific liquid, and then they break out that secret hip flask, you know, that's unmarked. There's no label on that whatsoever, and you know something special is going to come out of there. And that moment happened with Mr. Steve Olson, who is you're good friends with him. He is a genius and has been involved with Del Maguey for, 25 years now?
Yeah.
Since 1995. Who the hell was talking about mezcal in 1995, you know?
Steve and Ron Cooper, the guy who founded Del Maguey. And the two of them, you know, you're seeing a lot of mezcal available in the United States right now, but it's all built on the backs of these two guys because there was no mezcal coming.
Yeah.
Ron was the first one to have the idea that let's try to bring some of this stuff in. And just so everybody understands, Del Maguey is not a distillery that makes mezcal. It is a brand. What did Steve describe it as? They're sort of like,
it's a collection of palenques. Palenques is how they refer to these farm. They're as much farms as they are distilleries when you go down there to the hills of Oaxaca. But I believe it is five separate villages that they work with. And that's why they have this single village program, this single village series. So when you look at a bottle of Del Maguey, it'll say, you know, single village, and then it'll tell you what village it actually comes from. They have some spectacular liquids, of course. And what I love is that they are not resting on their laurels. They were, you know, at the forefront, at the vanguard, as we said before, but they have not, you know, like dumbed down their product in any way, shape, or form. When something new comes out from them, I want to try it immediately. And, they're still making some of my favorite, spirits, period, on the market. Now,
would you say it's the gold standard for mezcal?
No disrespect to our, I don't want
to Brian Christ,
Mr. White knocking on my door. You just
he
played
is the
that
one who
clip.
Knocks, man. You got to be careful.
He could knock right now on our door. So I'm just going to say I very much enjoy Del Maguey, and I was really, really appreciative of Steve Olson at one point bringing out that hip flask, and it was a pechuga expression of Tobala. You are familiar with pechuga, but for your friends and listeners at home, this is a product that it's a type of mezcal that is usually used for celebrations, for quinceañeras and weddings. And they will put into the still a cheesecloth that is filled with everything from chicken carcasses, which is the most common additive, to cinnamon, to maybe not chocolate. Melts too easily, but all these types of corn husks and everything that you might see on the banquet table, they put into a cheesecloth. The vapors pass through this cheesecloth during distillation, and it gives this crazy savory Christmassy kind of tonality to mezcal.
It's amazing stuff, and they've also played around with that. I know they had the ham.
Yeah.
The ham-infused mezcal, which is just...
Not just any ham, Dan. It was Iberico ham that they did in conjunction with Jose Andres. So no big deal.
Yeah, he's a chef of some note, I believe.
He does. Yeah. He has some repute.
You're right. That was a big highlight. Any other things that jump out at you in terms of parties or things you've tasted? What parties? No one wants to hear how much we partied. Although, I will say this.
I'm going to say the same thing.
These parties were absolutely insane. We went to our friend Simon Ford from Forge Gin, had an incredible,
yeah,
incredible party. Actually, the first night we went, Pernod Ricard had a party, and I thought this was really cool. They featured six bars that unfortunately were not able to weather the storm that was COVID, and bars that closed during COVID, and they brought the bar teams back together.
Getting the band back together.
And brought these six bars. I don't remember what all six. I know one was the Nomad. Mm-hmm. Any others?
Existing conditions was there.
And it was really cool because they brought back the bar teams. And, you know, they've all since moved on to other gigs, but nice to have that happen. And they recreate some of the cocktails that they used to, signature cocktails from these late, great drinking establishments.
Totally. I love any time where you're either A, partying with a purpose, as they say, or there is some good theme, you know, not just a bullshit theme, but actually, like, that was really cool to be able to taste drinks from these bar teams that aren't assembled anymore. I think is really awesome. And I loved, you mentioned Simon Ford's party. That was the 10th anniversary of his gin. And what was really cool about that is that there were all these different bars set up throughout the room, massive room. It was like, you know, convention center pretty much. And each room or each setup was, okay, well, do you want to drink from Katana Kitten? And Masa's behind the bar there. And do you want to go upstairs and drink from Two Schmucks, which is like a really reputable, well-known bar in Barcelona? Or it's like traveling the world in one place.
And then what's nice about being down there in New Orleans is that if you want to take a break from all of the revelry that's official revelry of tales, there are just so many great places. I spent a lot of time in the Chart Room, which is a classic. I don't want to say a dive bar, but it's a down and dirty New Orleans bar on Charters Street down there. And
Bar Tonique.
Bar Tonique is another great one. I did a little stint up at DBA on Frenchman's, which is another great. Did you hit any other cool bars down there?
I believe I was there that night on the first night with you and one of our good friends who works with the Sampson and Surrey portfolio. So we got to taste some, again, some really good mezcal vago, which makes their elote, which is kind of like mimicking, when we're talking about pechuga, this mimics kind of the flavor of the traditional corn street food that we all love, elote. Yeah. And Paul Letko walks in and it's like, here's Paul. Let's just, you know, drink some wonderful bourbon with Paul. I'm a big fan of his, what's it, the cold cut bourbon that he cuts down with, instead of cutting it down with water, proofing it down with water, it's cold brew coffee, which is just genius. That's the perfect breakfast bourbon, Dan.
Did you get to try the Black Rebel Motorcycle Club collab they're doing?
I didn't because I'm Jewish and we're not allowed to have anything to do with motorcycles. It's a cultural thing.
Your mom will yell at you.
Yeah, she will call me on the phone. She'll know somehow.
The band, Black Rebel Motorcycle Club, collaborated with Few, and they've got a whiskey. I don't know if it's out yet, but we tried some, and I tried some, and it's really a delicious. Paul would say, he said it's, I don't want to say entry level, but it's a whiskey that is going to be agreeable to people who might not be, you know, whiskey diehards.
What I love is, you know, some of these people that are high up, that they could be the ones making it, they get sometimes a little bit, let's just say, well lubricated, and then they'll open up to you and like tell you things about like what they have in the pipeline that maybe they shouldn't be talking about or that they wouldn't say if they were completely sober. And I'm just like in my head, just like nodding, like, you know, you're saying this to the one person that you shouldn't be saying it to.
Oh yeah. By the way, I don't know if you can hear the airplanes going by over top. We're actually doing this right by the Santa Monica Airport today, and it's a very warm day, but not as warm. That's why I got the windows open and everything here, but man, New Orleans does hot and muggy like nobody else.
It does mugginess for sure. I was in London right before I was there, and I was lucky enough to be there on the hottest day in the history of the United Kingdom. And the difference here is that, yeah, like it's really muggy and unpleasant in July in New Orleans, but every time you step into a room, this cold blast of good old American air conditioning just greets you in the face. You cannot escape it in London because there's just no air conditioning. Nobody's prepared for
that. That's terrible. But I want to ask you how you're feeling after that week at Tales. You feeling okay?
Yeah, I took the day off yesterday. I know we were just talking before the show and you did not, but I just took one day off from drinking and, you know, doctor's orders that, Don't you love if you guys are ever going out to your physical and they're like, so how often do you drink? And it's like, how, by what factor am
what
I going to reduce the number?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. It's, I didn't. Okay. By any normal standard, people out there listening, if they knew the drinking schedule that we kept down there, they'd be like, this is
appalling.
Yeah, how does anybody survive this? But
yeah,
for me, this year, this is probably about my 14th, 15th tales. I've been going since the middle aughts when they first kind of started it. And then obviously we had a few year break because of COVID, but I felt like a real adult doing this one. I didn't, there was no point where I felt like I used to. And to illustrate what I mean, but I dug up an old thing that I'd, diary basically that I kept. And this is from Tales of the Cocktail 2009. Back when the idea of doing this for a living was probably not something you'd ever thought of, right? You were probably like 17 years old.
2009.
At that point.
Yeah.
That's 13 years ago.
I wouldn't even have touched booze at that time. I grew up in a Mormon household.
That's right. So 13 years ago, Tales, I went down there and I kept this little journal and I wanted to throw it out to you, but I just said, compare
and
then and now. So, you know.
Wait, this is 2009, you said?
13 years ago. And okay. I got into town and I was still kind of feeling human. And I went to the Carousel Bar, which you know is in the main lobby of the Hotel Monteleone.
Absolutely.
Which
we were just with Marvin the other day.
Used to be the hub of Tales. It's now since moved to the Ritz-Carlton, but it used to be the headquarters of Tales, the Monteleone in the French Quarter. And so I get there and I get in the bar and it's early. And by force of habit, I look around, right? I did a spot survey because I like to know who I'm drinking with. You know, I like to check out my temporary family before I get soused with them. Are you in agreement with that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I see this guy. He's like one stool over, mid-50s. He's got a tie-dyed t-shirt on that read, "Love sucks, true love swallows."
Wow.
Yeah. And then he turned.
Classy.
Yeah, classy guy. So he turns and looks at me. Really, he tried to. His pupils were swimming in opposite directions. Mm-hmm. You know, this, right? The reverse cross eye.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's I've seen it before. I've seen it in the mirror sometimes. I've seen it. It's an occupational hazard. So he takes a long contemplative drag off of, he's got two Marlboros going at once, and he takes a long drag off one of them. And he says, "If alcohol kills millions of fucking brain cells, how come it never kills the ones that make me want to drink?" And this, my friend, turned out to be an entirely appropriate introduction to 2009 Tales of the Cocktail. I was on a site at the time, as you know, I was writing for Playboy magazine.
This is the third edition. I believe the first one was 2007. I want to say.
No, it can't be, because if this was the 20th.
Oh, yeah. Excuse me. 2007 is when the Spirit Awards
started. Yeah, that's when. So it was probably about the 6th or 7th. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And I was writing for Playboy at the time, so I was down there on assignment. After all, you know, Brad, I am a professional. I'm an upstanding member of the international drinking press.
Absolutely. That was probably back when there were even expense accounts for journalists.
Yeah, there was about 7 of us doing it. So I kept a journal, and here's a couple highlights, and we'll see how this matches up with our Tales experience. So Wednesday, 10 a.m., I'm hanging out at the Carousel Bar off the main lobby of the Hotel Monteleone with my new vision-challenged friend. You've heard this part before. Okay. 10:30 a.m., I roll into a panel discussion called Big Trends in Cocktail and Spirit Service, featuring Jim Meehan, who at the time
PDT
had a bar called PDT, and he was a upstart, young upstart, up and comer in the business. And in that week, he would go on to win Bartender of the Year at the Spirit Awards at Tales, and launched he's one of the
catapulted
biggest figures in the business, and remains that way today. Also there, Michael Waterhouse, you know Michael Waterhouse, and Simon Difford, Englishman. What's he got there? Difford's
Guide.
The Difford's Guide.
That is an incredible resource, by the way, for any kind of ephemera or esoteric information you want about any cocktail.
So he was there as well. All right, so now we go 10:34 a.m. Down sample cup of cocktail of a cocktail made with Tommy Bahama rum. No, wait. Turns out this is not a cocktail at all. Rather, just a plain old shot of Tommy Bahama rum. This has got to come out. Fucking plane. Is a plane landing in my fucking living room right now?
Is that Santa Monica Airport?
It's right here. Yeah, and like all the fucking flyboys are out on the weekend. Okay, let's try that again. 10:34 a.m. Down sample cup of a cocktail made with Tommy Bahama rum. No, wait. Turns out this is not a cocktail at all. Rather, just a plain old shot of Tommy Bahama rum. While conceptually impoverished, it tastes woody, smooth, almost nutritious breakfast life. Woof!
There's a woof in there?
Yeah, I put a woof in there, yeah.
Okay.
10:44 a.m., Difford opines that cocktails made with fruit are out, and that classic cocktails are where it's at these days. 10:45 a.m., Jim Meehan counters that he's all about cocktails made with grapefruit, blood orange, kiwi, and pineapple. Difford, in turn, threatens to drown Jim in the pool. Wait, or maybe it was, wow, Jim, you're cool. Frickin' British dudes, and they're hard to understand English, right? And you've been living over there.
Yeah, I know. It's really difficult, right? Especially once they start drinking.
11:22 a.m., Waterhouse just referred to cloudy apple cider as a great lengthener and quipped that size matters when it comes to ice cubes. I can't handle this sort of sexual innuendo before noon. Time to get the fuck out of here. These are my notes, by the way, for Playboy. You can see why I no longer have the job. Well, Playboy's not around, is it, Brett?
I believe they have different pay structure there now, let's say.
11:23 a.m. Are you keeping track of the time codes here? I want to make you. 11:23 a.m. Down another sample cup of Tommy Bahama rum for the road. I'm not even halfway through the first day, and every trace of shame has left my body. 11:36 a.m., back in the carousel bar for a few rounds of Bacardi daiquiris with an attractive spirits industry professional. Try out new pickup line about how love sucks and true love swallows. 11:38 a.m., attractive spirits industry professional has to run. Literally, apparently. I decide to stay a while and keep the daiquiris company. By the way, that should be the title of your memoir, Keeping the Daiquiris Company.
Yeah, Keeping the Coladas Company.
Yeah,
I like.
You're more of a colada guy?
Sucker for alliteration is what I am. But I was just, yeah, I was trying to remember who has, because Tommy Bahama rum is still a thing. And
Sazerac.
Yeah, it's part of the 375 Park Avenue portfolio. And that was kind of a very funny moment for me during this tale. It's like, you know, you're talking about being adult and kind of keeping things in check and in moderation. And it was like, literally 3:30 in the morning, and I was at Bar Tonic, and they were doing a portfolio tasting of an Agricole that they have that's sensational, St. James.
Oh yeah, it's good stuff.
From Martinique. So that's, you know, like an earthy type of French rum that's made from fresh pressed cane as opposed to molasses. And their ambassador, who's a lovely, lovely human, pours us this liquid, and she's like, this is how we're gonna start. And we're like, oh wow, this smells like really assertive. And we drink it, and it's like, whoa, it was basically 151 without any warning or anything. It's 4 o'clock in the morning, and we're just gonna start this tasting with 151. This is actually 148.6, but who's counting?
So maybe your tales was like mine back in 2009.
Didn't have any Tommy Bahama.
We'll jump ahead to 4:44 p.m. This is the first day, Brett. While having a late lunch of Maker's Mark, Red Stripe, and fried shrimp po' boy at a watering hole called Coop's Place. You've been
great
to Coop's place.
Great place. Right in Decatur, I believe.
Right there. Yeah. I meet a local woman with tar-colored hair, moonish eyes, and plasticine skin. She looks like the daughter on the Addams Family, except with a decent personal trainer. She swears, Brett, she's a real vampire. And while she certainly looks the part, I don't buy it. So she offers to bite my arm and suck my blood. I tell her that's way too weird for me. As if to illustrate my new shame-free existence, we make out instead.
Wow.
Yeah, it's great.
By the way, if she bites you, that doesn't prove that she's a vampire.
I know, but she tried. Yeah. She wanted to do it, and I outsmarted her, I guess.
Also, I will say that, you know, you're saying that she probably looked a little bit like Christina Ricci.
Yeah.
And the difference is, if you went to Tales today, like, you'd actually be more likely to see the actual Christina Ricci.
Because exactly.
She'd have some sort of...
She's got a brand.
She definitely has a
cachaça. She doesn't
have
one. She's going to have
Christina
one.
Christina Ricci cachaça.
6 p.m. I'm back at the Monteleone again and heading into a seminar called You Need to Get the Fuck Out of Here Before You Make an Ass of Yourself.
That's the name of it, actually?
Oh, wait, no. That was just what I wrote in my notebook for this time frame. Okay, so in lieu of an actual seminar, I bumped into King Cocktail himself, Dale DeGroff, perhaps the world's most famous mixologist, and I begin telling him about how I just made out with a vampire. 6:01 p.m., Dale has to run. I'm beginning to notice a pattern. 6:03 p.m., down sample cup of something. Could be rum punch. 6:04, down another one to be sure. Yep, seems like rum punch. Rum Clement? Isn't I saying that right?
Yes, Clement.
Clement. This requires...
We need Miss Frankie.
This requires further investigation. Another sample cup. I realize my powers of deduction are paramount. It says rum Clement punch right on the side of the sample cup. Mm-hmm. So I celebrate with another one.
Like a tea punch.
Yeah, yes. 6:10 p.m. headed back to my room for a power nap. The next entry in the diary is Thursday, 8:30 a.m. That was one powerful goddamn nap. I feel like a new man. We'll jump ahead to 2:55 p.m. I'm wondering if anybody else finds it ironic that the average age of the attendees at a seminar called Port, not just your grandpa's drink anymore, seems to be about 67. No, that's not a joke either. I was like, wow, this is kind of ironic. Okay, 5:51 p.m. Oh, dear God, it's Jeffrey Morgenthaler of Clyde Common in Oregon. Now, whenever I spend time with Jeffrey, this is from my notes, I wind up drunk or in jail or both. So naturally, I rush right over and ask him how the bar business is doing up in the Pacific Northwest. In this economy, we're all fucked, he says, handing me a sample cup of absinthe.
Some things never change.
We nod solemnly and slam them. We have just created the official drinking game of Tales 09. It goes like this. We're all fucked. Hey, I know. Let's get even more fucked. By the way, that kind of seemed like the theme on this year, too, didn't it?
It did, yeah. From financial crisis to financial crisis.
We're still here.
To pandemic.
You'd think we'd have people smart enough to fix it, Brett.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, here comes another plane. We're just going to talk through this one.
Yeah, let's talk about
all... Listen, if you're out there listening to the show and you don't like planes, well, you're not... What are you?
If you are a fan of planes, you should make a comment on Dan's site or on social media and let him know what kind of aircraft
that was
that just flew by. I bet you somebody could identify that.
At the Imbiber. Tell me what kind of plane that is. All right.
Cessna.
7:12 p.m. I take a stroll down Bourbon Street to sober up.
That's always a smart
Which speaks one. Volumes about yeah. how much of an ass kicker this festival is, right? Mm-hmm. And I pass at least three guys sporting the Love Sucks, True Love Swallows t-shirt. 8:14 p.m., suddenly I'm feeling nostalgic about the days of old when my dad used to wear a shirt that read, Mustache Rides, 5 cents. I drop into a t-shirt store to look for one, but the old bearded guy behind the counter tells me they discontinued that rude stripe of misogynistic casual wear years ago. Besides, he adds, shaking his head ruefully, you can't get a mustache ride for 5 cents anymore anywhere.
Yeah, inflation. Even back then.
We're almost done. Problem. I swear we're almost done. Sunday, 11:15 a.m. Okay, nap ran long again, but Christ, I needed it if I was going to walk out of this town alive. Besides, my work here is done. I have taken the temperature of the industry. Remind me to wash my thermometer. Now I've got bigger fish to fry. What, you ask? I'm bringing back the 5 cent mustache ride. All proceeds will benefit the Imbiber Home for Wayward Spirits publicists. You can tell the Nobel people to forward the prize to my Playboy editor. That poor bastard deserves it. So you can't believe I got fired from Playboy? It's weird.
I thought that it was a mutual departure.
No, they got rid of me. Okay. They threw me away. They got me out of here. Anyway, let's take a quick break, and then we're going to do the Bryan Cranston thing. You ready?
I'm so ready to take a drink right now.
All right. So while at America's Biggest Booze Fest, Tales of the Cocktail, I ran into one of my oldest and dearest friends in the business, H. Joseph Ehrman. Now, the fact that H is the proprietor of one of the country's best cocktail bars, Elixir in San Francisco, is enough reason for me to love the guy. But H also happens to be one of the fine folks behind Fresh Victor. You've probably heard me say this before. You can buy the finest spirits in the world to make craft cocktails at home. If you use lousy mixers, you're going to get lousy drinks. And let's face it, whipping up cocktails at home can be an expensive hassle. We don't always have time to go out and get fruits and veggies and squeeze them and juice them, or at least I don't. And that's why I'm all about Fresh Victor. Fresh Victor's a line of all-natural, clean-label cocktail mixers that taste fabulous. All of the ingredients are fair trade sourced. There's no artificiality, none. And the bonus of Fresh Victor over a ready-made canned cocktail is not just the jump in quality and freshness, but the fun of actually making yourself and your guests a fabulous drink. And rest assured, these mixers are produced at a 100% solar-powered juicing plant with absolutely no waste. And right now, Fresh Victor is offering a summertime special exclusively for my listeners. Simply go to freshvictor.com, fill up your shopping cart, and at checkout, enter promo code WWD20 to get 20% off your order. Don't hesitate. Now's the time to treat yourself to the very best mixers on the market, and that's Fresh Victor. Okay, so you probably heard me mention another rum brand earlier in the show. And honestly, I like that rum. But with all due respect, it isn't my go-to. For it to be my go-to, like doesn't cut it. I gotta love the stuff. And I absolutely do love me some Batiste rum. Batiste is the first sustainable American craft rum. Use an eco-positive, solar-powered manufacturing process from beginning to end. They make it from 100% pure, fresh cane juice. They're not using molasses. They're not using sugar crystals. If you like your tequila 100% agave, then you'll love your rum 100% cane juice. And most importantly, it's a hella fine rum to be enjoyed neat or in cocktails. So I got a deal for you. Or better yet, the fine folks at Batiste do. I'm just the conduit here. Go to BatisteRum.com. That's BatisteRhum.com. Fill up your cart and enter code DUNN, D-U-N-N, at checkout to get 20% off everything you've ordered. That's moolah, greenbacks, cold, hard cash. We can all use a little more of that these days, right? Folks, Batiste Rum is my go-to. Make it yours. It's proof that great taste with true sustainability is not a goal for tomorrow, but a reality today.
Hello, I'm Shannon Sharp of Skip and Shannon Undisputed, and you're watching What Are You Drinking with Dan Dunn.
And we're back from that little break. You know, I always encourage you to take care of our sponsors, so please do, please.
You talking to me?
No, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to Brad Jaffe.
Oh, that's me.
Roving correspondent Brad Jaffe. I can't believe we got you here, man. In studio, in Los Angeles.
It's been a long time.
It's nice to have you, man. You're always parts unknown.
It's good to be back here in Burbank, California.
That's it. It's good to be here.
Thanks, Johnny.
It's good to be here at the Santa Monica Airport where we're recording today. At least it sounds that way. Okay, so as we mentioned earlier, Brad and I did a little round table with some other people with Bryan Cranston. And want to play a couple of little highlights from that. It started off with Bryan ribbing one of our fellow mediaites who happens to look very young. You'd say he looks young, this gentleman.
He's one of our roommates, actually, during the
that's right.
During the week.
We stayed at a house down there, and he stayed with us. Can I say his name?
You can, yeah.
Jared.
Jared Ranahan, great journalist.
Great journalist. And Jared looks like a teenager. He really does. He's a very young-looking guy, and Bryan Cranston noticed that.
You know, you can be a bartender for a lot of years if that's your... is like, this is like a party every night. Yeah. Are you old enough to sit here? Just barely. I mean, look at this guy. How old are you?
27.
27. You look like you're 14.
He does.
But,
like,
but that, you know, I got to tell you, it's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
Being moisturized is a lot.
Yeah. Before long. See, drinking
spa
helps.
Treatments right. And things like that. Yeah.
Drinking helps too.
Yeah.
Drinking keeps you young.
Drinking.
It's good for your skin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you believe drinking is good for your skin?
You know, you're right here next to a big block of wood, so I'm going to take my chances and say this, that, I have not gotten the thing for the past 2.5 years, and the one, continuity throughout that time is that I've been drinking a lot, so.
Well, no, that part's good. It's not that part. I asked you if it's good for the skin.
Oh, for the skin.
What I was trying to do was tee it up, because I'm a little older than you.
Yeah.
And this was our chance, and we'll edit this so it makes it sound natural that you actually said what.
Yes.
And you're just going to go, well, Dan, look at you. Look how vibrant, I was going to say crisp. I don't really want
that.
My skin to look crisp.
You're like a vampire.
I've had a horrible accident.
You're like a vampire.
Okay, so we're never going to say, by the way, disclaimer, we're never going to say drinking's good for you. All right, don't fucking come at me. Okay, and then so after that happened,
also, I will say, being with Jared this week, you saw that he was getting carded at 27. Were you getting carded at 27 years old?
Oh, my God. I got carded until I was about late 30s.
Late 30s?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
That's
not anymore.
Incredible.
And then a few years ago, as Brad is aware, I was my most recent long-term ex-girlfriend, significantly younger than me. And that was a real humbling experience because we would go places and they would say, can I see your ID? And like she'd go, reach for, and I'd reach for mine, and they'd say, yeah, well, not yours.
Was she closer than half your age plus 13? Because that's the rule, right? Or
no,
half your age?
I was more significant than that. Well, you see how attractive I am. Look at me. I'm very attractive. I attract the young ladies. They like me.
Isn't that the rule, though? It's half your age. No, it's half your age plus 7.
Not that's my rule. Those are your rules, buddy, not mine. I'll tell you that right now. Yeah, no, I don't have that rule. I don't follow that rule. I never have. So next up, I fired one of my... I'm kind of famous for my hard-hitting journalism, and I fired one of those questions off at Mr. Cranston.
And right. I was wondering something. You know, we were talking earlier outside about when you and I did the show, and I think we drank together for about 2 hours over the Zoom.
I will not admit to that.
How does it feel to be back in public and shaking hands and drinking with people in person?
You know, human beings, man. We're social creatures. We need to connect. And I think the entire world was feeling repressed from not having that access, not being able to engage and interact. Unfortunately, the technology is so good that it almost makes you feel like, oh, I see them all the time. We're Zooming and, hey, I see them. You look great. A new haircut or whatever. So it almost gets you such a close facsimile of socializing that you almost don't realize you miss it until you get out and you go, oh my God, no, I haven't really experienced getting out until recently. I mean, we're all in that boat. I did a movie called Jerry and Marge Go Large.
I believe you started laughing when he said that. Did you see the movie?
I did not, but that's a funny title. Can we say that?
It's very funny.
Rhymes.
Yeah, it's funny. very funny title. Rhymes, I didn't see it either, but I think you laugh right here. I'm giving it away.
And I know.
That's not my laugh.
By the way, you sound a little dainty when you laugh. I'm just going to say that.
The Jerry and Marge? Or
it was the Going Large.
The Going Large. Yes. Some people say, why'd you do it? It's such a sweet little movie. And I go, yeah, because that was the first film I did after the lockdown. And I wanted to feel better. I wanted to have a sense of community. I wanted what you were suggesting is I wanted to be able to connect with people. And that movie was that with Annette Bening and I. And it was like, oh, this is nice. This is great. The sweet, true story, you know. And as I tell people, I said, that movie will not change your life, but it could change your day. And there's value to that.
That's sweet.
There's really value to that.
We were talking about t-shirts earlier.
T-shirts.
That might be the thing.
Absolutely. Do you think he said that? Do you think that was his thing?
It was a really good quote. Did
the writer or somebody from, you know, pitch this on
that? What do you think about that on a t-shirt? The movie won't change your life, but it'll change your day.
Yeah, but it's going to beg the question, like, what movie are you freaking talking about?
And that's what I'm saying. It's a great conversation piece. And people go, what movie are you talking about? And you go, what movie do you think I'm talking about?
You don't want people just coming up to you unsolicited, do you, Dan Dunn? You already get enough of that.
Yeah, that's true. I don't need that. You're right. Good point. Fuck that t-shirt idea. Note to self, no more.
This is the world's best-known podcaster. He's not mentioning Et Tails, okay? A bartender just came right up to him and was like, you're Dan Dunn, aren't you?
She said she recognized, but are we going to tell the real story? So we were at this party, and my friend, Kurt, I'm going to call this motherfucker out, Curtis Robinson, old friend of mine. He's been on this show before. Curtis is at the bar next door, and he says, come on over. And I love Curtis. I've known him forever. He's kind of the guy that got me started in my journalism career. He was my old editor at the Aspen Daily News way back in the day.
Wow.
So I go over there, and the bartender is there, and she's great, and she's all cool looking, tatted up, blue hair. And I come in, and I'm ordering something, and she looks at me, and she's kind of curious. And she really sold this, and she says, wow, I recognize your voice. She goes, and your face. She goes, are you Dan Dunn from What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn? And I says, I am. She's like, oh my God, I listen to your show all the time. And now I'm at Tails, and I'm thinking, that's my... And I buy it. I'm like, this is so... I was so happy, Brad.
You were. I saw you that night.
And I'm like, this is amazing. Like, it's somebody... Right, you know. And then
he described it as the best moment of his life.
Best moment of my life. And then the next day, I bring it up again to Curtis. And I said, wasn't that cool? And he just fucking rips my heart out casually. He goes, oh, I told her to do that. And I just gave her a big fat tip at the end. And I go, you're lying. He goes, no, I... And I instinctively knew that he had told her that. And I go, well, why didn't you just let me believe it? He goes, I don't know. I just thought it'd be funny to let you know that I actually told her to do it.
He paid her $50.
He gave her a big fat tip anyway.
Yeah. So we digress.
So next, I had a clip here. I'm not going to run it. It was about the Dos Hombres origin story.
Yeah.
It's been covered. Brad's written about it. You can go back and listen to the Bryan Cranston episode of this podcast. We talked about that. So now we're going to jump ahead to Brad actually fired off
more hard-hitting journalism.
One of his famously probing questions, which actually, what's cool though, is this led to Brian talking about something very cool related to his role on Breaking Bad.
Once you launched it and you're kind of coming into this world where, as you see, there's like a lot of geeks and, you know, they know the varietals, they know all these production peculiarities, if you will.
Yeah.
Isn't that like a little overwhelming and intimidating to kind of just enter, be thrown into that mix?
No, I like it. I you know, in my day job, I enter every job not knowing whatever I'm doing. Lyndon Johnson, Dalton Trumbo, I don't know. I have to learn. I have to be a student. And so I not only am used to it, I like it. I don't mind not knowing. It's like I like to learn. I've learned a lot about mezcal and how it's grown and the different varietals and things.
But you did used to cook meth when you were young. Rumor.
Well, but I didn't know it at the beginning.
Right. That's
what I was a student.
Like one of these Twitter factoid sites was like, you and Aaron Paul like actually learned how to cook meth for the show.
We did. Actually, it's true.
Oh wait, that's dude. What that a was my great favorite question part. Because yeah. I had no idea, and it was so cool. Where did you find that?
There's just some random factoid that came up on Twitter, but it's a verified account. So when it said that, I was like, there's no way that that's real. It said Bryan Cranston and Aaron Paul were taught how to cook meth for their roles on Breaking Bad. I'm like, the next time I see Bryan Cranston or Aaron, I'm going to have to literally ask them that because that seems too unbelievable to be true.
It was so cool.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we had...
Why do you think he's got that beard?
It's a verified fact. Twitter thing, so I was like, that seems like bullshit, but...
No, it's true. We had DEA chemists who were consultants on the show. And so...
You're doing it wrong.
No, the idea was that they taught us, step by step, how it's done. To us, Vince Gilligan, and our entire writing staff, it was a select few people who were in this class, basically, and said, here's how it's done. Now... we make sure, and every episode where it shows us cooking, it is specifically and purposefully shown either out of sequence or missing several steps. So it's like, so someone
not
watching the show,
they say,
I got it. Right. I got it. I know how to do it.
Finally, that person's going to blow up.
They're going to blow up in a little shack somewhere. It's not going to work. But they taught us how to do it so that we don't accidentally do it right on the show. You know? It's like oh, and it's very it actually reminded me of the detail in making mezcal because it's very specific.
Oh, wait, there's a bunch of people running out to buy Dos Hombres right now. They're like, what's in this mezcal?
We don't need Sudafed. Fuck Sudafed. Tobala.
Like a great chef, you could put the ingredients of a beautiful meal in front of me and say, here's all you need, make a beautiful, and it's like, I can't do it. I can't do what a chef can do because they're trained to do it, and it would taste so different. It's the same thing with mezcal. There's a recipe connected to it, and you have to do it just right, how many days they want it to ferment, how hot they want that copper kettle to be, how that flow comes out. Twice filtered, three times filtered. What I mean, it's like it's all recipe, and it's held very tight. They don't reveal, you know, how they do it. It's really
so you
cool.
know more about making meth actually than you do about actually making mezcal is what you're telling us.
I well, it's like that old saying. I've forgotten more than you know you'll ever know. I couldn't make it if I'd blow myself up if I tried to make it.
I don't know if he's talking about mezcal or meth there.
I think probably both. Yeah. It is impressive, though. I mean, he's, you know, he's done a really good job of educating himself, I think, on what's going on. Because you and I know this, and you do it more than anybody I know. I mean, and I have a lot of celebs on here. Both of us do. Talk to celebrities that have gotten in the booze game. And I would put Bryan sort of up by the top of the list of people that have really taken the time to immerse themselves in it and figure it out.
Yeah. Also, doing the heavy lifting. So the story I wrote on them was for Food and Wine, and it was, as you mentioned, following them around the valley as they went from BevMo to BevMo. The real joy of that for me was just like they were driving into like a Dos Hombres little like 4Runner or something that they have, and we'd be driving on Ventura Boulevard and people would pull up and like do this double take, like, what the fuck? Why are Bryan Cranston and Aaron Paul driving down the street right now? Like, it was fun to see people's. But the point here is that they go and they interact and they realize that, like, this isn't trivial. When you're going there to the stores and you're interacting with the people and shaking their hands like a politician, basically, that's how you promote case sales. That's how you amp up distribution. And now I know that, you know, that Bryan wasn't actually able to officially say this, but from my information, from my research, I found out that they're the third highest selling mezcal in the United States right now. And that's insane because they launched 3 years ago and they're number three. That's really, really impressive.
He also talked about how he likes to drink his mezcal, how he takes it.
Yeah, if he does.
How do you take it? He gave us an answer.
Anybody want some? Or you guys,
so he's passing around the Tobola.
And he does get high on his own supplies.
Yeah, he certainly does. And I had the Tobola, which is about a $350.
Right. So I had not tasted that yet, but I don't know if you had.
No, I hadn't.
They have
no.
Their flagship product, which is an Espadin. That's what you'll find everywhere, which is, you know, closer to like $40 or $50 a bottle. I'm not sure. But this one, as you mentioned, way more expensive, only released several times a year. I was super, super jazzed to try that.
So he was passing that around.
Yes, please.
Tobola or...
This is literally the latest that I've drank so far. This year.
Let me open up the Tobola.
How do you drink it?
Neat? I like to drink it neat. Yeah, I will. It depends if.
Thank you.
In my home bar, I make sure that the bottle is kept cool, not cold, but in a cool place so that it doesn't warm up.
Now that begs the question. What is the temperature, Brad? What is the proper temperature to keep this stuff?
Cellar temperature, for sure.
Cellar temperature, okay.
Which is slightly below room temperature. A good deal. I mean, what is cellar temperature? Is it saying right there? Probably about 60 degrees or somewhere between 58 and 60?
Right to me. Yeah, that sounds about right to me.
You don't want it to be cold, for sure, but you certainly don't want it to be warm. And incidentally, that's how I like my red wine to be consumed as well. I know you're a big wine guy, and I'm so pissed off that somehow, some way, it got into people's mind that red wine should be consumed at room temperature. It's very aggravating.
Should be cooler, right?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Got a couple more here. So at one point he was talking about the town where the Tobola is made. It's very remote. And after Bryan revealed that, I took the opportunity to get to the real reason we were there, Brad, which was to talk about his iconic TV roles.
3 hours outside of Oaxaca City. It's really, really remote. This place has one landline telephone. No cell service. Mm-hmm. One phone with an amplification. It's on a post in the middle of the town. So someone calls, it rings. Whoever's walking by answers it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. How did you post to Instagram while you were there?
Oh, we like cell phone. Did we? Oh, wait, I don't know.
I'm thinking, how do I do you have the number for that phone? Because we should just call. Yeah. Excuse me. Hello? Yeah. I'm looking for the local.
Yeah. Yeah, can you imagine if we announced, here's the number, and then no one can get through?
Also, just for a moment, he is being a little bit modest there, which I freaking love that he's not making it a thing, but they've reinvested money into that town and actually like have developed the infrastructure, the communication infrastructure in that town. So there's going to be telephone lines and it's not just going to be that one payphone.
Oh, that's amazing.
And the fact that he did that and he's not like bragging about it to a bunch of journalists, let me brag on his behalf. I think that speaks volumes for what they're doing.
I think it's amazing.
Like, did they get any idea of who you were or like shows that you were on? Like, is it just there was some kind of buzzy,
like
but
Malcolm in the Middle fans.
Yeah.
Would be amazing if like, Tim Watley.
Well, no, because he's probably got. We talked about this. You probably like joke, but like Seinfeld is on everywhere, the time.
Yeah,
I bet a lot of people
there. To this day.
I bet a lot of people might know you more from Seinfeld than from.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I never keep track of that.
Don't you go around? Don't you go around and ask people, how do you
where
know?
Where do you know?
Seinfeld's known for giving everybody, you know, the nicknames and everything, and you're one of the rare characters who's two. You're both the anti-dentite and the re-gifter. You know, right. Very few people have like two monikers.
Brad, you're wrong about that. I am the re-gifter.
I am the re-gifter. For certain.
But I'm not the anti-dentite. I'm the dentite.
The dentite.
How can I be anti?
Right.
That's right.
Right.
It's like, by the way, Brad, work the stereo over there.
Yeah, yeah.
Coach, please.
I want you to go outside, think about what you just said, and when you're ready, come back in.
By the way, that's the thing about him, man. He's quick, and he loves to give you shit, and it's fun, but it's always, like, very good-natured.
Good-natured. Yeah. Sternly dressed down by the dentite himself.
By the dentite.
We still love you.
And this bottle will be empty by then.
And nobody ever brought up the point where it's like, you know, we will not be regifting this mezcal.
No.
Could you buy a new house just on the Seinfeld residual? No.
Seinfeld could.
No, yeah. I no, because I never. I only did 6 episodes.
Really?
Yeah.
It's so you're outside.
But like you said, it goes over and over and over. Yeah. Right. Like, and they talk about me and stuff like that. But. And I look different in every episode because whenever they'd call, I was doing something else. And I had a beard. I didn't have a long hair, short hair. But, you know, it's like a mustache, no mess. You know, it's like, and they didn't care. It's like, I don't care. That's funny.
It's also interesting as a personality that he transcends. He is recognized by so many different demographics.
Yeah.
You know, because you're talking about Seinfeld, you're talking about Breaking Bad, which is widely regarded as maybe the best television show of all time, and then Malcolm in the Middle as well. So, I mean, you have like everything from like, you know, baby boomers all the way, because Gen Z got really into, they've like started discovering Breaking Bad. Like, whoa, like I love when a Gen Z discovers something, like it's the first time it's ever been discovered. That's what's happening with Breaking Bad.
Wait, another famous cameo, and you actually got him talking about, because you were talking about improvisational comedy and working with Larry David.
And if you had this recurring role with Seinfeld, obviously, and you were brought in to do Curb, so clearly you know Larry David must enjoy working with you. And what's that process like, being on and having that freedom to kind of like
love
improvise
it. I love it. I mean, it's, if you're comfortable in doing it, and I am, I've done improv for many, many years. In fact, classes for years doing comedy improv, and it was a blast. And so getting a call from Larry, and he says, okay, you're going to be my therapist? You know, okay. He says, you have to get out this information, you know, I have to get out this information, and whatever happens in between happens in between. So I was just throwing out all kinds of stuff. Just saying, you know, like, Larry, okay, the last time we talked, you said how much you enjoy going to the zoo and watching animals fornicate. Is that still something that, you know? And he starts laughing. And then Jeff Schaefer, who's directing and producing, goes, Larry, stop laughing. Do it again. And it bounced me back to doing Seinfeld, when Larry would chastise Jerry for laughing during a scene. In fact, what you see on Seinfeld is Jerry constantly in that state of laughing. That's the best one. That's when he wasn't laughing, just smiling. And that's what they kept.
That filled me with so much joy, though, when he said that, because it's like, just imagine that being your working environment where you're just holding back a smile every single take that you're doing. Like, that's how you know you're creating magic. If you're just having that much fun while you're doing it, obviously it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah.
Kind of like what we're doing right now.
Exactly. So I kind of brought the round table to an ignominious end by asking, I would throw this out, maybe the dumbest question of the day, but I asked it because I'm fearless like that, Brad.
one real quick thing. It's a very popular debate now. It's the modern version of Paul versus John. Better series, Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul? Let's hear it from you.
Him that.
I don't know if that's really a debate.
or if that's really an answer.
Very presumptuous of you. Look, you're even embarrassed. Look how red you are. We're embarrassed for you.
I think I'm turning red now, just thinking about it.
That was a ridiculous question.
I'm a fan of the show.
Yeah.
I'm in it. I don't know what episode I'm in. I think it's coming up.
I think by the time this podcast airs, it will have. I think I read that it was the second to the last episode.
Like, that's it. This
is the
Better final
Call
season.
So there's only, at this recording, there are 3 left. When this podcast goes up, there will be 2 left. Yeah.
Wow.
So I believe he's in. So yeah, it'll be the penultimate episode he's in.
I think the real question, let's just say a better question to ask him, more unbiased, from his perspective, would have been, do you believe that this is the best spinoff show that's ever existed? And I ask you that. I direct that to you.
That's why you're the pro. You ask.
What do you think?
Yeah, I can't think of another spinoff.
Joni Loves Chachi? That's not on your list?
I mean, Frasier's got to be up there from Cheers. That was a great...
That would be in the conversation, for sure.
But not as good as Better Call Saul. Well, there's like... And then there's the opposite direction, which is like, how much milk can they get from this fucking cow?
Yeah, where's it going to go from here?
Because I'm watching AMC because the Breaking Bad's or Better Call Saul's on there. But it's like, how many more
AMC?
Walking Dead shows? There's another one coming out called Tales of the Walking Dead. I'm like,
wait,
Jesus.
Is that from that's the zombie invasion Christ. At Tales of the Cocktail is what it sounds like.
Let's take one more quick break, and then we're going to wrap things up very shortly. We got the interview with Ms. Frankie Marshall. And now, a word from one of our dream sponsors, Miller Lite Bowling Tournament, circa 1982.
The score's all even!
Last frame, who's up?
Rodney.
Rodney!
You gotta be a mistake.
Hey, you kidding? It's a piece of cake.
All we need is one pin, Rodney.
Like beer from Miller. Everything you always wanted in a beer, and less.
I didn't get my turn yet. I'm going to break this time.
Joining me now, on this trip to New Orleans, I've been encountering a lot of legends down here, and she's probably going to hate me for using that word legend because it makes us feel old. But she is. She's a legendary bartender, and we're going to talk about what she's done and what we're doing here at this lovely Bar Mary Lou Martel Cognac event. Please welcome Miss Frankie Marshall.
Hello, Dan Dunn. Thank you so much for having me.
It's so good to see you.
Likewise.
So everybody knows out there, Frankie, you're from New York, born and raised in New York City. Yeah. You have been making drinks for quite some time. You were one of the original crew at the Clover Club, correct?
That is correct. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a bar that was one of the first sort of... In the modern craft cocktail resurgence, the Clover Club was one of the sort of forebears out there in New York. So you were on that first staff. Who else was on that with you?
Who can remember these people? Ah, no, I'm just kidding. Let's see. We had Nate Dumas was there, Brad Farron, Giuseppe Gonzalez. Who else was on that? I know I'm forgetting some people right now. But it was a really great team, though. And I'll be honest, I started as a server and then worked my way onto the bar. Yeah. So, but I learned a lot from everybody. So it was a really great experience.
And did you do, you were Dead Rabbit too, right?
Yes. I was on the opening team at Dead Rabbit as well. And a few other places like Tippler, Monkey Bar, Holiday Cocktail Lounge, places like that. I know I'm forgetting some place. And I ran my own bar called Le Boudoir in Brooklyn. So, yeah.
So you know your way around a bar.
Well, you know, still figuring it out.
And we're here at this event. Martel Cognac is throwing this here at Tales of the Cocktail, and you're making cognac-based cocktails.
That's right.
And what am I drinking right here? Because this thing is delicious.
So right now you have what's called the jus de matin, or your morning juice. So it has orange juice, carrot juice. It has a little bit of smoked sea salt in it. The corn liqueur, the Nixta corn liqueur, and of course the Martel Blue Swift. I think I have everything there.
Wow. Yeah. Now, when you're trying to come up with these drinks, right, you start with the base. So you start with the cognac, I guess. And then how are you, in your mind, are you already building it or are you just putting stuff in and trying? Or do you have a pretty good idea of how you want to make that cocktail before you've even put the ingredients in?
Well, I'll be honest with you. When I was working in a bar, when I had everything, you know, at my fingertips, all the ingredients, I would kind of do it that way. Just kind of try a few things, throw out the tin, you know, what was in the tin, try a few more things. Much to the chagrin of any owner, I'm sure. Nobody wants to hear that. But now that I work from home, because I'm just doing freelance, I have to be more careful and more kind of... precise about what I'm trying to create drink-wise. So with this one, I had the idea in my head already because I just love the idea of, you know, cognac with the corn liqueur and I just thought, you know, the juices would go well. So this one is more about playing with the proportions. But yeah, it really depends on the drink and the ask what I'm trying to do. So
sure.
Yeah.
And this is what's interesting about this event is it's talking about They gave a nice presentation earlier. You did about the long, rich history, not only of Martel cognac in general. I mean, Martel's been around for over 300 years, right?
Yeah.
When you're working with a spirit like that,
yes,
is it, does it feel a little bit more special to you when you're making these drinks as opposed to if you get hired by such and such flavored vodka company?
Right. It does. Well, you know, I'm a cognac educator, so I really do respect the category. And yeah, that's one thing that people don't realize, that cognac has been around. Many of these houses, you know, Martell is 1715, you know, many of these houses go all that way back. So there is that legacy. So yeah, I do respect the liquid, to be honest with you. So yeah.
It's funny, when even myself, when I'm thinking about, you know, making cocktails, especially now, it's hot here in New Orleans, and this drink is so refreshing. Yeah. Cognac isn't the first thing to spring to mind when I'm thinking about refreshing cocktails, but it really is, you know, from the sidecar to some of, you know, on down, right?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for that. But yeah, I agree, and that's also why I wanted to make the drinks this way, to design these types of drinks, because people don't think of cognac, like you said, as refreshing oftentimes. They don't think, oh, I'm going to make a summer cocktail, let me reach for that cognac. So that's part of what I like to do, is kind of change people's perceptions and show them that, yes, you can have a refreshing cognac cocktail. And my other drink that we're serving today has a little grapefruit cardamom syrup, dry vermouth, and topped with champagne. It also has a little bit of saline in it, and topped with champagne. So again, an easy drinking light refresher as well.
When you you say you're a cognac educator, what would be the two or three things you think most, if you had to convey anything about cognac to the average, not average, but somebody who's maybe not an expert drinker, what do you want them to know about cognac?
Well, again, about the legacy of cognac, that it's been made, like as you said, for hundreds of years, that it's made from grapes. You know, cognac is a distilled white wine. A lot of people forget that, too. And that, you know, it is versatile.
Uni Blanc?
Uni Blanc, you're right. Yeah, or Trebbiano, as we say in Italian.
I'm just showing off, Frankie.
Yeah, as you should. It's your show to do all the showing off you'd like.
Yes. So, okay, the rich history. What else you got to know about
cognac? And, again, it's versatile, the versatility of it. You know, again, people, to your point, that you can make drinks with it year-round. You know, you don't just have to wait till the fall and winter, you know, and pair it with apples and pears. You know, you can do so much with it.
You get the different, like you got XO, you got VS, VSOP. Yeah. What are the differences?
Yeah, so VS, very special, a minimum of 2 years oak aging. VSOP, very superior old pale, a minimum of 4 years in oak. And the XOs, minimum of 10 years in oak. And mind you, these minimums are often the minimum. Most cognacs are age for much longer than that, but those are the minimum requirements.
It's insane. I've been over to Cognac a few times. It's been a while, but when you go to some of these old houses and you're talking about the Martells and Cavassier and Hennessy and Hein, places like that, you go down in the basement, man. I mean, and I've been, and you have as well. I've been to a lot of bourbon distillers. When you want to see some old shit,
yes, exactly.
It's in a cone. You'll see some stuff that, oh, this is, well, this has been here for 200 years.
Yeah.
Like, what? It's just sitting there, I guess. And I guess maybe some of it eventually makes itself into a blend, right?
Yeah, definitely. That's called the paradis normally, or the paradise.
Yeah.
So that's where the cognacier, that's where the master blenders keep all of their prized, the oldest cognacs.
I called it shit. I didn't mean shit. The old. I said that some of the old shit.
Shit. That's also what they call it. You know.
So I've been here many days at Tails.
No, you know, I'm with you. But absolutely. And by that time, they've moved it out of barrel into the glass. They call them the Dame Jeanne or the Demi Johns, right? They move them so the eau de vies don't take on any more of that barrel characteristics. So now they're in glass. Usually covered in wicker, and then down in that parody. And some of them do go in. Certain houses blend little bits of the older cognac in with the younger ones, and actually that is one distinguishing factor about cognac as well. One feature is that it is about blends, and it's about that really masterful blending of the young eau de vie with the old ones, with the medium aged ones. So it's all about that.
And finally, before I let you go, you know, we talked about you being such an integral part and being involved in some of the sort of signature bars in New York and all around. How cool is it for you? I mean, we had a little bit of a break here, Tales,
yeah.
Because of apparently there was some sort of a pandemic going on that kept us all away. How cool is it for you to be here now and run into a bunch of old friends and people like that from the industry?
Honestly, it's it really is wonderful. I was looking forward to this, Tales. I wouldn't have missed it for anything, almost anything. Yeah. But it's great. It's great being back here with the feel of it. And like you said, I mean, I don't know how better to say it than how you just put it. Just seeing all these people again, getting distant hugs and just, I don't know, absorbing all of this culture. I've been in New Orleans off season when no one's around and it does feel so different. So the way it feels during Tales is something almost indescribable. It's a really wonderful thing. I love it. I'll just say I love it.
It really is. Well, speaking of VS, very special. It was very special to me to get to talk to you. I haven't seen you in many years, and it's great to see you again. You make drinks like nobody else. I mean, it's just they're fantastic.
Thank you so much. And I just want to say, in keeping with that, I'll say XOXO to you.
Love it. Thank you. Miss Frankie Marshall, everybody.
I also want to say just very quickly, Ms. Frankie Marshall is such a sweetheart, and I love working with her so much, and I'm very jealous that you got to spend more time with her than I did this week, because she's very, very busy doing a lot of work with Spirits Education and with Martell. Last time I saw her at BCB, out of nowhere.
Bar Covenant Brooklyn.
Brooklyn, yes. Convent. It's not a nunnery. There were no nuns that I saw, but
yeah.
But she sees me, and she's like, oh, I've got something for you. And she pulls out of like her purse... Okay, she had just come from Guatemala, a hand-woven, she ordained me, it was a yarmulke. I mean, I'm pretty sure that it wasn't woven as a yarmulke, it's probably a coaster, but she presented it to me as a yarmulke, and for my faith and tradition, that really meant a lot to me.
Wow, man, she is fantastic.
She's a very thoughtful person.
One of the most stylish people I've ever met. I mean,
sure.
She is...
Purple is her theme.
She's never showing up in jeans and a t-shirt.
No.
She's always
kinda
dressed
like
to the nines. Exactly.
Kinda like me.
She is the polar opposite of Brett. Well, that was pretty good, huh? And you know who else are pretty okay? You, Brett Jaffe.
Oh, thank you so much. I know Miss Frankie Marshall, but...
I would talk to you all day, but you know what, Brett?
It's over, Johnny. It's over!
Nothing is over!
It is over, though.
Can we put in one other quip where you're talking about the way that I like to dress? When we were at the House of Elix and my buddy, your new buddy, Eric Andre, the comedian, stopped by.
Yes.
He sees me and he's like, you look like every single person I've ever bought acid from.
Yeah, Eric is he's a trip, man. And thank you for introducing me to him. We ended up hanging out a bunch and he and I were at the airport together in New Orleans on the way home. And man, do people love that guy. He was getting mobbed in the airport. We saw there was a group of like a high school group on some sort of a school trip.
Certainly not going to Tails.
Coming back, I hope not. Coming back to Los Angeles, and they were on our plane. And when we walked up towards the boarding area, these kids lost their shit, man. They went nuts. And it was like being with one of the Beatles back in the day. They were like, every phone came out. They're all like this and doing, you know, and he's just so good, man. He like got in with them and he took a big selfie. So really cool introducing him to, I can't talk anymore. But Brett, I appreciate you being on the show. What do you got going on? Where can people check you out on social media? What should we be looking for next?
Where am I going? You know I have that very friendly, user-friendly Instagram handle at journeys_with_Jaffe, J-A-P-H-E. Super, super easy to remember. I will be drinking at one of my favorite bars, The Prince, before I leave town. I love getting cocktails from there, maybe even some fried chicken. Jose Andres has a new spot in downtown L.A., which I'm going to check out while I'm here. And then, it's over to Chicago to check out some things, friends getting married and some new bars, of course. And then it's back to the UK, my friend, cause I'm expatriating.
Can we get some updates from you from the UK?
Absolutely. From the UK.
And, I want to, put on a little outro music. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. I want to thank everybody that I was involved in this episode, from Brian Cranston to Ms. Frankie Marshall to Brad to, of course, all of you out there. Doesn't happen without you. We got Glenn Howerton coming up soon.
Oh,
episode. I think Eric Andre might even be on this show at some point soon. Wait, our music went down. Put it on again. There we go. Yeah, let's try it again. Black Rebel Motorcycle Club is supposed to be doing an episode with us. I'm going down to Fortaleza Tequila soon.
Oh, that's
gonna be
so awesome.
It's going to be fun.
One of my favorite tequila brands.
And Brad, here's a cheers to you, my friend. Oh. Bye, everybody.
Cheers.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.